You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
14 Mission 2, San Jose Avenue.
From our 901 Mission Street studios, you are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle.
Welcome to the big event and our KFOG tribute. KFOG ended its run 2 weeks ago, playing some Dave Morey highlights on its last day before becoming KMBR's FM station. During the golden years, KFOG management let the talent try creative things, and the DJs and producers never took that gift for granted. Their bond with listeners was rooted in sincerity. I went to KFOG events co-hosted by my good friend, TV critic Tim Goodman, and always was struck by the positive vibe. The KFOG hosts weren't putting themselves on a pedestal. There was this idea that radio was a dialogue with the listener, and we were all just hanging out among friends and having a good time. I wrote a tribute to KFOG for the Chronicle recently, but my viewpoint was as a listener and very occasional guest. I really wanted to get KFOG newsman Peter Finch, DJ Renee Richardson, and producer Irish Greg McQuaid on my podcast and hear their stories. They came, we covered a lot of ground, and there's a lot more laughter in this podcast than sadness. We talk about everyone's first day at KFOG, some highlights and low points, including Greg's incredible Wayne Brady story, definitely in the low points category. Another reason I wanted Peter, Greg, and Renee on is to let people know they haven't gone away. There's a reunion on Friday, September 20th with Dave Morey that's very much sold out, but all three have podcasts, The Finch Files with Peter Finch and Renee and Irish Greg's Pop-Up Bay Area. Greg has also been building a collection of KFOG audio, including 10 at 10s that fans recorded, and Greg will be sharing those with the world. We talk about it at the end, but it's something I should have brought up sooner. Look for updates at popupbayarea.org. Peter, Greg, and Renee coming up. I really enjoyed this episode. We're your concierge for culture in the Bay Area. I'm Peter Hartlob, and this is the big event. Welcome to the Chronicle, Peter Finch, Irish Greg McQuaid, and Renee Richardson. And I'm the one handling the board here. This is role reversal.
It is so crazy. The newspaper man is handling the audio.
Well, I'm so thrilled to have you guys here. Everybody, you know, this news came out that KFOG, for me, it was already gone, but that they're going to switch and have KMBR be KFOG now.
Yeah.
And then everybody's sharing their memories, and they're talking about you guys like you're dead.
Yeah. I was asked about this the other day, and you know the way people talk about how wouldn't it be nice to be at your own funeral?
Yeah.
See what people say about you. It had that feeling about it. It was also the longest death of all time.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well,
right.
The thing for me, too, is that people would ask, how are you doing? Yeah. You know, well, on the last day, and I married my first girlfriend, so I wouldn't know, but I guess I would liken it to an ex when they ask you about your ex and the ex has gotten married or something, and you go, you don't really want to talk about it. You know? It's like you wish them well, but it's like, no, I don't want to talk about it.
And I moved on so quickly that, like you said, for me, things changed a long time ago, and that was that.
One thing, Renee and I did text each other that morning. I was a little involved in helping Jason, the last PD at KFOG, get some of the audio together for the last day, which I wasn't expecting. It was like I ended up producing the last day. Not quite. But so I was familiar with what they were going to play. And again, I had detached myself somewhat from the radio station as well. But I texted Renee the day they were playing our last show, and Tony Salvador, our old GM, was on. So the Dave Morey's last show from 2008, they rebroadcast. And I was like, I'm getting a little nostalgic. And she was, too.
I was, too, but it was for the Dave Morey K-Fog that I was nostalgic for. Yeah. It wasn't anything. It was our show. It was Dave, I should mention, it was the listeners. It was that.
That they made this announcement, and then I immediately started listening to K-Fog because I always want to see what song they have on repeat for 5 days.
Oh, right. The cleanser or whatever they call it.
Yeah, and I turned it on, and they've got like Rage Against the Machine on and these drops. And I was really frustrated because I'm like, well, if it's going to die, at least put, you know,
have fun.
Put something that's K-Fog on there, and then they did.
Yeah, the last day.
And Jason, they wanted to do more. They wanted to do a last week of it, and corporate kind of relented and said one day.
Yeah. So. But Dave Morey, he posted, you know, it was the last day that kind of got to him. And for me, like I say, I was saying, oh, I don't really want to talk about her as like, okay, you know, K-Fog was long gone. But the last day, it was so kind of emotional.
And Jason's did a good job because he's not, you know, he's only lived here 4 or 5 years. He doesn't have a personal connection to the station necessarily. He doesn't have a great connection to the Bay Area as such. But when I was showing him all this material, he wanted the Doobie Brothers sessions and the Boz Scaggs sessions and was very in tune with the local stuff that's way out of his demographic, quite frankly. He was quite in tune with how the station should sound on the last day.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here to share a few memories. I'm frustrated. I mean, I've been frustrated for about 10 years as things have changed, but I'd love to start and just kind of capture some of what I loved about it and what you guys loved about it. I'd love to just hear about like your first day at work, if you remember it.
Peter should go first because he was there before us.
Okay. Well, I go. So when K-Fog became a rock station in 82, I had just graduated San Francisco State. I was a late night weekend DJ on KMEL, which in those days was rockin' the Bay.
I remember it.
Yeah, you had to say it gutturally too, KMEL San Francisco, rockin' the Bay. You know, I didn't do it right even there. But this new station, K-Fog, came on. And at that point, KMEL was playing a lot of Foreigner and Loverboy and stuff I wasn't really into. I went, wow, this station sounds really good. So I sent Dave Logan, the program director, a resume and a tape, and got a nice letter from him, but nothing came of it. The station, KMEL, changed format. I went to Colorado for 8 years and then came back here. My wife's a native San Franciscan, didn't have a full-time gig, but got on with Dave as the fill-in news guy for 9 months, and we clicked. They liked how we sounded together, so then they made me full-time. But for me, being gone 8 years and wanting to get back to San Francisco so much and knowing K-Fog, it was literally a dream come true. You know, I don't remember my first day. I remember being introduced to Dave because somebody walked in between us right at that time. We had to dodge around somebody to shake hands. But I don't remember the exact first day, but I know early on they would have me write the newscasts in another room and then come into the studio to deliver it. And not long after they made me full time, they said, no, stay in the studio with Dave. And then, you know, we became part of a morning show, and then they added these guys on over the years. So yeah, K-Fog, it's sad now that I'm talking about it. Those call letters go away.
I will say, and I think Greg would agree with me, because we came from Live 105. Greg came on to K-Fog before me, but when I did come, because I was on the air at Live 105, and then they put me on at K-Fog, and the fans, the whole relationship with the fans was wildly different to me. There was utter respect for the fans. The fans would call and want to get to know you. And the way K-Fog brought a new person in was the way you should. Slowly introduce them on the air and let people get to know you. And that was very different from everything that was going on in alternative radio.
My first memories were coming from Live 105 that we had to take a drug test. So I didn't think I was going to get the job to start with.
That's right.
But a few things I do remember. My very, very first day, I got hired at the end of 98, so in December of 98. And the first of all, I went in and we had a meeting before the show. Dave and Peter would meet with a big stack of newspapers, Chronicles. Am I allowed to say other newspapers?
You absolutely
Mercury
can.
News, the Oaken Tribune.
You said Chronicle first.
There you go.
That's fine.
I was the guy that would stop at the Chronicle right outside here at 4 in the morning and pick up the huge stack of papers. Yeah. Anyway,
so I remember my first day, there was this big pot of papers and we were in the conference room over on Hawthorne Street. And Dave, and I'm pretty sure smoking was already banned everywhere in California at that point, but Dave was just smoking at the conference room table. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. And I still smoked at the time.
At four in
the morning. So I lit up. And then I remember my first day because two things happened. We're on Mission Street in the Chronicle right now. And my very first day, the PG&E power plant down here on Mission Street exploded. I remember this yesterday.
Yeah.
And my whole thing when I was at Live 105 was to pick music that fitted in with the news of the day when I was with the Alex Bennett show. So I was like, Electric Avenue, and Dave thought that was cool. And so suddenly I was kind of on the in with Dave. But that was also the end of the year, and there was an end of year party that day. And our general manager and sales manager, so Dwight... what's Dwight's last
Dwight
name?
Dwight Walker.
Thank you. Dwight Walker. I'm getting old.
Senior moment.
And Mark Silverstein, our head of sales, both shaved their heads off completely. And I'm like, why is the GM and the head of sales shaving their heads off? And someone said, well, because they had a bet at the start of the year that the station would bill $30 million this year. This was 1998. The reason that stands out to me is that the last go-around, I think when we all got let go, in 2016, the station bills $3
million. Wow.
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow.
Renee, do you remember? I'm taking Peter's
job. Yeah, yeah.
Renee,
go.
Do you remember your first day?
I don't remember my first day at all. I just knew that I always had the deepest respect for KFOG and what KFOG was trying to do. And I felt honored to be working with Dave and Peter and Greg on a morning show that was, like Peter said, talk to its listeners as intelligent people. And the only weird thing for me was prior to that, I was a bartender. So I was going to bed at 3:30 in the morning for many, many years. And that first day that I was waking up at 3:30, taking the bus to go to work, I saw all the old regulars going, hey, are you coming to after party? I'm like, no, I'm going to my new job.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty wild.
I do remember Renee. So Paul Marszalek hired both me and Renee and gave us somewhat of latitude. So Renee was known as Renee Rotten.
Oh yeah.
Over at Live 105 because her last name is
Rottenbucher. Rotten Butcher.
I can't say it. And so it ties in with the alternative Johnny Rotten and whatever, but wasn't going to work on KFOG. But Paul Marszalek allowed you to come up with what your new name was going
right.
to be. Do you
That's
remember
right.
this?
I do remember. And I thought, "Oh, I'll be Renee Richardson."
No, you were going to be Renee...
Oh, Richards.
Richards,
yeah.
Richards
you're right.
Yeah.
I'll be Renee Richards after the transsexual tennis player. Who's going to remember that? So I go on and announce as Renee Richards, and the phones light up, and it's crazy town. You got Renee Richards to do traffic? And Paul called me, and he's like, we got to change this. Richardson. Yeah. That's right.
What's cool about Renee, too, is for years radio, the model was, it was kind of like professional baseball. You started in the minor leagues, the small market, then you went to a medium market, then if you were good enough, you made it to a major market, the big leagues.
Nobody told me that.
Nobody told her that, and she went from, you worked at a health club too, right?
Yeah, I worked at a health club.
That's how you got the Live 105 gig.
You're
right?
Absolutely correct. He knows more about my story than I do.
Well, Dave Morey, you know, you bring him up, and I can't believe we should plug it. Henry Winkler told me that you have to plug things three times.
There is a name.
So your show is sold out. We're not going to plug that.
Yeah.
You've got a show coming up with Dave Morey coming from Detroit. But Finch Files, people can listen to you there.
Yeah.
Peter, you got a new one out. And pop up with Renee.
Yeah, it's a terrible name, so you couldn't even get it right. So you basically just encapsulated everything that's wrong.
Renee and Irish Greg's pop up Bay Area.
Yeah, it's something like that. Renee and Irish Greg's pop up. So we thought it was a good idea. Again, there was alcohol involved when we came up with the name, but then we quickly learned to realize that you need a catchy name, something with zip, something with pizzazz, something that people will
remember.
Like
a big event.
Yeah.
So it's Renee and Irish Greg's pop-up.
Do you want to know why I'm the big event?
Why?
No. I mean, why?
No.
I'm going to tell you anyway, Renee Rotten. It was The Poop. Was my parenting blog.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
But I got sick of talking about kids and I wanted to talk about pop culture. So yeah. I went to like Pixar and I wanted to get like John Lasseter, which at the time was a big deal. I wanted to get him to do an interview with me. And I'm like, it's for The Poop. And I just couldn't say it.
Yeah.
So he told me, he's like, just give it another name. He said, it doesn't matter what the name is. It's forgettable as... more forgettable the better.
Yeah.
So I just like the big event. Yeah. Maybe I'll do some events.
Yeah.
I haven't really done any, but you know.
So there you go.
Well, Peter should talk. We'll talk about our pop up in a moment, whatever it is called. You should talk a little bit about the Finch Files, though, Peter, seeing as you were asked first.
Well, and I did it first because when I left KGO like 4 years ago and no radio stations were beating a path to my door, it's like, what am I going to do? So I, and people had said over the years, you should do your, first it was the Fog Files on KFOG and at KGO it became the Finch Files. You should do that as a podcast. So, you know, there was a pretty quick learning curve and I did it. But in the meantime, I got a job at Alcatraz, you know, so I did the podcast. I'm still doing the podcast, but now I pretty much just do it when I come across somebody interesting or find an interesting story to tell. It's not every week anymore because more radio work has come my way. And
it's harder to do.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, as you know. It's a lot of work.
A lot of fun, but a lot of work.
Yeah, I'm learning that.
It's not
super easy.
That dovetails into the story with Renee and I. So we do it. Renee came to me and was like, this was after we were fired in 2016. The other thing I noticed, by the way, when radio people talk about being fired a lot, and no, there's not many other occupations that people get fired all the time, and it's just part of the business.
Right.
In every other, like we talk about being fired all the time, and everyone must be like, you must be really bad at your job. But people get fired in radio a lot. It's just, it's part of the business. So, but when we got fired... that was your only time getting fired. I was fired from KFOG twice. But the last time, Renee came to me and was like, let's do a podcast.
No, it didn't go down like that.
Well, it did. No, you said, we should do a podcast. No, is that not what happened?
No, it was your second time being fired.
Yes.
And I could tell, you know, you were just hitting your stride with on-air work.
Yeah.
And you had so much to give still and so much to do. And I had done podcast work early on at KFOG. I don't know if you remember all the local scene podcasts and all that. And so I said, well, we should do a podcast. I'll support you in that. Let's do a podcast. Yeah. And then so was born Renee and I.
The given was that he had to do all the work. You just had to show up.
Right, exactly.
So business as usual.
We just high-fived me and Renee.
But the idea was Renee wanted it to be, again, we would just sit on a deck and drink and talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, if we're going to do it, let's do it properly. And at KFOG, we used to go out every Friday morning during, or not probably once a month every, but Fridays in the summer, we would go out on the road and take the morning show out and we would have bands play. People would come. We'd be at Pyramid Ale House in Walnut Creek or Gordon Biersch in San Jose or whatever. And it was this whole communal kind of thing. So I said to Renee, why don't we do that with our pop-up shows? So we do it and we still do it in front of a live audience. And again, like Peter was saying, it started off very ambitious. It was every 2 weeks. It was a new band every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It was just trying to produce a program every 2 weeks, especially when you're booking live bands and it's got an audience. So we scaled back to once a month, and now we're scaling back to what Peter was saying, because you get to the point where you book bands just for the sake of booking bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it be kind of, you know, it just, you're going through the motions. So then when... now we found that a George Clinton or a John Oates or a Steve Earle will drop in your lap, and that's worth doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So we've kind of now are moving to that model also.
Right. Plus there's fatigue. I mean, you have so many fans here that come to your shows, and you know, they're going to come as often as they can, but you know, you can't ask people to come out every week.
You still sound like you're having fun, though.
Absolutely.
I think the last one was in a mansion in Piedmont, and you had a good crowd there.
Yeah, it was a good crowd. Alcohol seems to be a common thread.
I got tipsy that night. That was fun.
It's a little inside baseball too. If we were getting rich off our podcast, we'd probably be doing that more. But you know, bless Patreon, it brings in a little money, but not enough to make a living off of.
So you have a sold out event coming up with Dave Morey. I've got to ask, how did you get Dave Morey to come back? I just thought he went off into the wilderness in Michigan. And how's he doing?
He's great. So Renee and I see him quite a bit. He's actually not in Michigan anymore. Believe it or not, those winters got to him after a while. And he moved to Palm Springs.
We joke he went from the coldest place in the world to the hottest place in the world.
So, but we've, and Peter stays in touch with him too, but Dave is the most reluctant, I don't know if he would like to be called famous, but he's certainly, he's famous. He's somebody knows, but he's the most reluctant famous person you've ever met. So he does not like the spotlight at all.
I don't think that's ever why he did radio, for any kind of spotlight. He just wanted to make good radio.
He loves playing radio in the studio, but in terms of being on stage in front of an audience, one story once, we did a live concert once at Frost Amphitheater at Stanford. And they had me and Dave doing stage announcements right after the Sub Dudes had played, and they were on a tight time schedule. And Dave was kind of freaked out about being on stage already anyway. And because it was such a short set by the Sub Dudes, you had people like eight rows deep just yelling at you, Sub Dudes, because they wanted. And so we're trying to do these announcements as we're talking. A roadie unplugs Dave's mic, and Dave's like,
"Never again."
Next I saw him was over drinking with his friends. You know?
So, but the way this came about was. The whole K-Fog finally, you know, died, and there was all this nostalgia. And I wrote Dave and I said, hey, we should do a reunion. How about the end of the month? Expecting him just to go, no way, I'm not doing it. But he wrote back immediately and said, I can't do the end of the month, but I can do the weekend before. And I'm all in. And so we all get together. Yeah. I'm like, let's get the band back together again. That's cool. So that was whatever day that was, and literally the next morning I get a text from Dave going, we need to talk. Here we go, because I knew the moment he said yes he was going to try and get out of it. So I called him and he's like, well, there might be problems and this, that, the other, but anyway, we worked it out, and as of now it's still going ahead. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think Dave, he went through this nostalgia when he retired in 2008, and he's been around the block a few times, but I think the level of outpouring of love that came around this time surprised him.
And I can't speak for Dave, but I also think that the fact that we're doing it offsite, we're doing something that is different, and it's more about the fans coming together, and he likes that.
I went on a couple of times when he was there, and I remember feeling a little intimidated, like, don't F this up. I got a little bit, like, I walked in and I felt like just the level was raised a little bit. Yeah. And I say that all in a good way. Like, I always felt like whenever you were a guest on K-Fog, you guys wanted me to come in. It wasn't going to be a phoner.
Right.
Tim Goodman, you got him to come in, which is incredible, because you know he
doesn't
want to leave his apartment.
That got harder and harder as the years went on. I will, to back that up, so Sean O'Sullivan from the 21st Amendment was our beer guy. So we had all these various experts on. So Tim was the TV guy and Sean was the beer guy. And Sean would come on, was it not every Friday, but he'd come on once a month and he'd bring loads of beer, and it was on a Friday and we'd have a couple of beers. And he'd be so nervous. He'd be shaking on the air and he'd do the bit and it would be fine. Sean was perfectly good on the air.
Yeah.
And then I would get texts all day. Dave Morey hates me. I've never been invited back. I sucked. That was the worst thing ever. So you're not the only one, Peter, to say that you're intimidated by Dave.
Yeah, I do remember, like, when Webster came in, I was just like, oh, this is way more chill, but I probably wasn't as good, because I wasn't scared.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, Dave is kind of a regular guy, and even, you know, as you notice on the interviews, all of us would contribute. Dave was pretty much running the board, and he would kind of introduce the guests and hand it off to us, and then he'd chime in if he wanted to. Yeah.
I always felt a little bit like we were, Peter, you go back a long way with Dave, so I won't lump you. In fact, Renee, I won't lump you in with this either, but I always felt like the whole morning show was kind of an annoyance to Dave. He just wanted to get through it to get to 10 of 10, which was his sweet spot. The 4 hours of the morning show was something he endured.
And yet, when Tammy Faye Messner, former baker, if it was a guest or if it was a fun, like when the Dead Hensons came in, and for the first time that I recall, a woman tap danced on the radio on our morning show, he got a big, he would get a kick out of
and
stuff.
Peter, I'll try and dig this up for you. But there is a photo of Dave sitting on Mr. T's lap, like he was Nancy Reagan.
Oh, that recreating that photo.
Oh, my God. Okay.
That was funny.
Yeah.
A couple people were chiming in on Twitter, I remember that day, and people were talking like Gavin Newsom would come in every week. Yeah. I mean, you don't see that.
We got Gavin Newsom into a dunk tank.
Yeah.
I think he was still supervisor then, but at our summer picnic at the Concord Pavilion, he showed up with Kimberly Guilfoyle, so it was that far back. He got in a dunk tank for us. K-Fog, that was, we were, you know, there was so much buzz about the station, or people wanted to be involved with it during the glory years, you know. And you would, that's how we got Barack Obama when he was running for president, albeit a phone interview, but twice we got him on. But it was like, you know, people knew people were listening, and it was, and the listeners were involved, and it was just a really special time.
And there was never any kind of like gotcha vibe to our show, you know, when other stations were doing this, like whatever you call it, that snarky.
Were guest friendly, you know.
That was the whole thing, especially for Renee and I, again, coming from alternative radio, where there wasn't disdain for the audience, but the whole, the general vibe is cynicism. K-Fog is the opposite of that.
I really felt like, I mean, so much of what radio is and what my job is transactional. Right. It's like, you come here, you'll talk about this, I'm going to get to ask you about this. I never felt that way, or I didn't feel that way often with K-Fog. Mm-hmm. I felt like people could come on and it was a good hang. And sort of a different vibe than a lot of other places, especially when you had someone who was kind of famous on. A lot of times they'd know what K-Fog was before they came on and come on just a little bit more relaxed.
We were given a fair amount of latitude. Paul Marszalek hired Renee and I, and Paul was an amazing boss. And Dave Benson, who was the boss for most of the time when we were there, just, he gave us so much latitude to kind of do what we wanted and broke all the kind of conventional rules where, you know, I worked at other stations after K-Fog or in between my stints at K-Fog, and everything had to be 2 minutes and everything was so regimented.
God,
And K-Fog didn't have any of that. If it's good,
It's like, we want to have a morning show beat poet. Okay. But a lot of that was the reflection of the fact that our numbers were good. The ratings were good. And so it's like, why mess with this, you know, which Cumulus didn't understand. We won't go there. But never mind.
I remember, I don't remember if it was someone here, but I do remember when that switch happened, someone saying, you know, they're calling us and telling us, hey, we can get you Ryan Seacrest. And I'm like, that's not what K-Fog is. I want Chuck Prophet again.
There's a few misconceptions, or I think are misunderstandings about Cumulus. You know, people feel, oh, well, it was when Dave retired, Cumulus came in. Or certainly people thought the Cumulus really changed things when Peter left for KGO and Webster and I were fired, and then definitely when everybody got canned in 2016. Fact of the matter is Cumulus has been running that station since 2006, so they were there for a lot longer than people realized.
I mean, essentially, Dave left not too long after Cumulus took over.
3 years after they took over.
3 years after. But one thing to note was Dave Benson had a contract, and as long as he was there, he protected what was going on, and he really kept Cumulus at bay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and before Cumulus, we were owned by a company out of Pennsylvania, but they had the wisdom to let the local folks run the station who got it. Then Cumulus came in. They wanted to run it out of Atlanta, and in fact, let Dave Benson and the general manager go. It was also, they had bought all these stations right when the recession hit.
Yeah.
So it was a whole money thing too. But they never really got what K-Fog was about.
I think the problem. Sorry, go ahead.
I think the problem is that what you guys were doing, a lot of it was indescribable. I mean, it's intangibles.
Right.
Going to an event. And it's not the tent with the K-Fog and you look like you don't want to be there.
Right.
I mean, you're at the event, and it's like a party, and yeah. It's a good
you're
hang.
Seeing, yeah, you're seeing old friends, and yeah. you're hanging out.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and I don't think that's something that people in Atlanta like is yeah. intangible, well, indescribable. Just trust me, this yeah. is a good thing.
So the prime example of this is Kaboom. We yeah. used to throw a big party for 1,250,000 people.
Oh, I was
Piers
there.
30 and 32. And basically spent our entire advertising budget on blowing up a bunch of fireworks and having a bunch of bands and allowing all of these people in for free. And when Cumulus came on board, their heads span. They're like, what on earth are you doing? You know, putting on this free party, not getting that all of the goodwill that this generated. And it stays in people's minds forever. And it meant so much to yeah. people. And within 2 years of them coming, Kaboom was gone.
Yeah.
High points. Those live events you mentioned, Kaboom.
Yeah.
What are some other kind of high points from your 10 years?
Somebody else go first. I gotta think.
Well, for me, it's stuff that I got to do with KFOG with family members that made it so special. Not necessarily even on the air. I was doing a public service announcement from Make-A-Wish and took my son over to the ballpark where he got to meet the Giants rookie manager Bruce Bochy and the 49ers coach Mike Nolan. And then my daughter, Martin Short, was doing a show at the Curran Theater, and they wanted, once during the show, a local celebrity would come up, a plant, and Jiminy Glick would interview them. And so I did it with my daughter in the audience. And maybe the coolest thing of all, I hope I don't get choked up here, at the Kaboom 1 year, Craig Easley, our beat poet, did the benediction at the beginning with my dad, who was a musician, playing bass behind him.
Yeah.
So memories for me, because I'm a family guy, that, you know, and plus all the cool guests we had over the years. But for me personally, it's that kind of thing.
And I would have to agree with a lot of that. You know, I've moved on from radio, so far away from radio, that when I talk about my life, like, things come up and I'm like, oh yeah, I met that person. Yeah. I interviewed that person. Oh, I got to see that. Oh, I remember that. Like, I have so many opportunities and interesting people to talk to and just learn about. And those things, that blows my mind that we had all those opportunities.
Credit Greg, he used to get those guests.
Well, what I was going to say. Yeah. I was going to laugh because there's a great Irish writer called Olaf Tarnson who writes for a music paper there. And he jokes about he gets on a plane. You know, whenever he gets on a plane, you get to talk to the person next to you. And they say, what do you do? And he says, I'm a rock journalist. And they're like, oh, my God. You must have met everybody. He goes, yeah, I've met everybody. And they keep throwing names at him. You met Elton John? No. You met Paul McCartney? No. But believe me, I've met lots and lots of very famous people. But I would say, because I was the producer, and you might appreciate this, Peter Hartlob, as a radio guy, it was the get. Yeah. So getting big guests was a big deal to me. So when we got a Paul McCartney, or when we got a Barack Obama, or when we got a Robert Plant, or any of these things, that was, sorry, that's not kind of cozy and sappy and sentimental, but yeah. I just really liked those nuts and bolts of getting those interviews.
And then I liked seeing when Greg would rub his hands together.
That's right.
When
I
he gets so excited when something was working.
Exactly.
Well, I asked the guy who wrote a book, who was the manager who some people blame for Kurt Cobain's death or whatever, but he was the one that made Stevie Nicks, took her out of Fleetwood Mac, made her a solo star. Danny Goldberg, I think, was his name.
Something like that.
But I asked him, you know, how do we get good guest too, and he said, you're halfway there being in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which is such a cool city and people want to be on the radio there. But then Greg was the other half, you know. He charmed people with his Irish accent.
He could get away with anything with that Irish accent.
Could I take over your job?
Yeah.
Who was the least pleasant guest you remember?
Oh my God! Well, the one that we'll all say it at the same time: Wayne Brady.
Wayne Brady.
Really?
Yeah. Oh my God!
Mr. Nice Guy,
Wayne
not so
Brady.
Much.
Yeah. Yeah. He's such a jerk.
He was. Now Peter's rubbing his hands together. No, he came into the city to do improv, and he had two fellow guys with him, and came in. and didn't want to do improv or didn't want to do anything on the morning show. It's like usually you get a stand-up comedian, you want him to be kind of funny. Not only did he not want to do it, he was
he took it out on me. So here's the thing: you talked to people.
Wayne Brady chewed you out.
So oh my god!
We didn't do like it's not like the Letterman where you do this whole pre-interview. So, but it's an informal kind of here's what's going to happen on the show. And I'm like, so you guys are doing improv at the Punchline or whatever. So can we do a little bit of improv, you know, after the interview? That's, you know, why you're here. And he said, I'll see how I feel. It depends on how the interview goes. So that's a very open-ended thing. So we're live radio. So you're doing the interview and you're going, okay, well, it's going okay. So I chime in with, can we do a little bit of improv? And he begrudgingly stares at me but goes, yes, and I don't know, we had some game concocted.
Yeah.
And it took place and it was awful and we left the studio and he literally, and he's not a big guy, but he literally put me up against the wall.
Really? Like, physically?
Do not ever put me in that position again. It was a whole thing. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, favorite guest. Charo. I love Charo.
You got Charo.
Yeah.
Look her up, kids.
She's going to be in town next week.
Right. That's a really hard question. I'm going to regret this immediately because I'm going to get out of here and think of something much better. But I'm not even the biggest, I'm not a Steve Miller fan at all. But Steve Miller came in a three-piece suit. Look, I thought he was a sales guy, had got off on the wrong floor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Are you? Can I help you?" And he's like, "I'm Steve Miller." I was like, "Oh, yeah, you got a guitar in your head." And he was in a suit. He was doing promotion for Martin Guitar or something. And he just came in. And we stuck a microphone in front of him, and he played like
Take the Money and Run. It was all I could do not to clap.
Yeah, but Peter is very excited about it. And can I say something slightly rude?
Sure. You can even swear. We just put a little E on it, expletive.
Okay. So I just thought of my favorite guest ever. It was Grace Slick.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
We had Grace Slick on the show.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Though she is.
If I heard that Grace Slick pushed you against a wall, I would have felt really.
So Grace Slick came on, and. And yeah, obviously a local legend, and she's, you know, she's a salty broad, if I may say so myself. She, you know, she speaks her mind. But we used to sit, we didn't have like traditional radio chairs. We had kind of more like chairs that you would have in a conference room,
at work. Office chairs.
So office chairs, thank you. So she came in and we all had our chairs and the guest chair had a big old white spot. Right on the seat.
It was dirty.
And so she comes in. I don't think we were on the radio yet, but she, I said, there's your chair. She goes, you got to put me in the cum stain.
Well, and then she and Ray LaMontagne were the only two people to get away with the F-bomb on our show. She was quoting
her
teacher.
You're looking like I have to edit that out.
I don't. Actually, you could swear.
We're swearing
now.
I loved it when Grace Slick was on another time because she was basically saying Jefferson Airplane was great, Jefferson Starship, not so much, you know.
Yeah.
And I was trying to convince her as a child of the 70s, no, the Starship was really good. We ended up having her put on headphones and listen to Play on Love, and she's like singing along with, and at the end she conceded it was a pretty good song.
Look at that. That's
but
cool.
You'd have musicians come on, the Grateful Dead, like Phil Lesh would do that. I remember a lot of musicians, we'd play one of their songs or whatever, and they'd really be like into listening to it, and you hear that? That's where we did that or whatever. That was cool.
Well, I remember too, I mean, we're talking about some of the famous artists, but one reason I listen to K-Fog is for discovery.
Right.
I think Chuck Prophet, the first time I heard him was with you guys, and he's one of, I don't think I listen to anybody more right now.
More than our Live from the Archive CDs, I love that every year, and this was a thing that Renee and Rosalie did, we would compile a local scene CD. It was all local artists, and I still listen to those. Those
were
great.
And getting to know those artists, it was fantastic.
And they were so happy because they were getting airtime on K-Fog. You know, August was April. August was Music Month. Right?
Local Music Month
local
was
music,
August. Yeah.
And so we would play these artists, and they're being played on the radio. And
it was fun to see artists also grow too. So Matt Nathanson obviously is somebody that comes to mind.
Train first played on K-Fog back in the day. They were out of Petaluma.
Well, I wanted to get a couple of couple of personal things, individual questions for you. Are you still running, Greg? 52 marathons in 52 weeks was the last I heard from you.
Yeah, so here's the deal. I was on the board of a charity called Breathe California, which is a clean air and smoking cessation group. And I used to smoke cigarettes, and I gave up in 2007. So for the 10th anniversary of that, I was just on this board. They thought it would be good to do something that would drum up a bit of publicity. I was still on the morning show at the end of 2016 with Renee and No Name. And then when you were on the radio as a bully pulpit, you could raise a ton of money for charity. So I'm like, I know, I'll just run a marathon every week for a year. It won't be pretty.
Wait, think about that for a second. He was going to run one marathon a week.
Well, I did.
Yeah. And he did. But
you're not spreading it out. You're going to run 26.2
miles once a week, so every weekend. But the kicker of this was I announced it, and so once you announce it, especially in this day and age with social media and whatever, you're all set. So starting in 2017, the first week of January, I'm going to run a marathon. I'm going to do one every weekend. And as soon as I announced it, lo and behold, we all got fired. And so raising money was going to be more difficult. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, no, I've already committed to doing the marathon. So I did it. And we raised some money. We raised a couple of $100,000, but we didn't raise as much as we could have. But no, to answer your question, that's a very long answer. I am no longer running.
Well, good for you. You deserve the break.
Thank you.
Are you smoking again?
Or no. I'm not smoking. No.
Renee, Metallica?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, All Within My Hands. Yep. And is that your gig now?
That is my job, yeah. I took a job with Metallica. They started a foundation in 2017. They wanted to give back. They had been giving back to food banks their entire career. Nobody really knew that every tour that they did, they would always give back to a local food bank. So that was something that was inherent to the band. They decided to go public with it in 2017. And then they established the foundation to really focus on two things, and that's workforce education in the trades and feeding the hungry. Mm-hmm. And they were working on it internally because they have an amazing team at Metallica, but they are Metallica, and they are a for-profit band that is doing great work around the world, the biggest band in the world. Nonprofit foundation work that's new to them. They have a wonderful board. We have an amazing executive director, and they needed somebody who could navigate this. And I do believe that my background in radio and being around musicians and famous people, and that not being this, it's just not precious to me. What's precious to me is getting money into the hands of the people that are going to do better and have a better life for themselves. So they asked me to come on board in March of this year. I joined as the associate director of All Within My Hands.
And how cool to get to give rich people's money away. Yeah. Right?
I know.
And there are different celebrities around here who have different reputations. Those guys are just delightful. They are not like, you know, you listen to the music and maybe you're a little intimidated.
Yeah.
We've interviewed them over the years. They're really accessible.
Yep. Yeah.
You're doing anything about horror movies.
Yeah.
Kirk Hammett will get on the phone with you.
He loves it.
So cool. That's really cool.
And they're very passionate about what the foundation is doing. It is, it's to the core. It took them a long time to decide to go public with it. And when they did, and now that they have, they're doing it to their fullest capacity. And it's amazing.
Well, that's super cool. Glad you're involved with that.
Me too.
Yeah. And I got to ask you, are you still working with Alcatraz, Peter?
I am. One day a week.
KCBS now, so you're busy.
Yeah, weekend overnight news anchor, KCBS. I do some fill-in traffic for KQED and other stations.
I love hearing you do traffic on KQED. I'm like, listen to him. He knows where the roads are.
I know. I'm such an infrastructure geek. Well, I feel like I'm like the utility infielder of Bay Area radio these days. It's like they plug me in. But it was like, I'll use a music analogy. I was with a really popular band. The band's no longer together, but I still love playing music. Yeah. So you're a
session guy.
But in the meantime, I took a job at Alcatraz when at first radio, nobody was beating a path to my door. I was working there 5 days a week.
You were the head of docents?
The head of docents, but the guy that does the hiring, it turns out he was a huge foghead. So he, he loves having me there. But so I started picking up radio work again. And they said, well, at least if you can give us like one day a week. So come out to Alcatraz on a Wednesday, and I may be the one that sets you up with your audio player to do the tour. We got to get you out. Peter Hartlob has never been to Alcatraz.
Oh, really?
So this was my dark secret, and then about a year and a half ago, I started doing these more public-type events and things with Heather Knight, our city San Francisco columnist. And I get her title wrong, too, when I work with her. And it got out. We did a tourist trap day. It was tourist traps that we like, and it got out. I had never been to Alcatraz. I still haven't.
It's one of the tourist attractions, the kind of the cliched tourist attractions that I tell everybody who comes to visit me to do.
Yeah, because it's not super touristy. It's it's a national park, actually. But you come out there, and if you're a history buff, great. But otherwise, the views of the city are amazing. I highly recommend it. And I've gotten to where I can explain how the players work in 6 different languages.
Oh.
My goal is all 11, but I'm up to 6. Yeah, thanks, Google.
Well, let's plug one more time, the Finch Files, and Renee and Irish Greggs, pop up, capital U, capital P, exclamation
Thank
point,
you.
Bay Area.
Thank you. Can I have one more point? So Renee and I do a podcast about once a month in front of a live audience, but what's perhaps more exciting to people listening to this podcast is I kept all morning show interviews and performances for 15 years.
Okay.
And now that K-Fog is no longer there, I am unleashing these to the public. Also, a bunch of Fogheads sent me a ton of 10 of 10s. So on our page, I am putting out audio every couple of days. Today we had today's taping on Friday the 13th.
On your
page.
Is this your website?
Go to popupbayarea.org and it will redirect you, but also on Patreon, patreon.com/popupbayarea.
Okay.
So it's all there and it will be for years. I'm going to be uploading this forever.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
Until
are gonna love that.
Cumulus
you don't
comes
need to
me and tells me to stop.
Because Renee's coughing.
I know, I have a cold.
And
I'm
when I went to K-Fog, you had a cough button.
Yeah, we did.
It's my fault that I don't have that for you.
Yeah, you got to work
very
on that, Peter.
I lean away.
Unprofessional setup. I thought we'd end like we started. Were you feeling the love the last couple of weeks?
Yeah. Well, I posted a photo on Facebook before these guys became part of the team. It was me and Dave on a billboard in the South Bay, and back in those days I got to interview Steve Young from his house twice a week via phone line, and he's on one day, so Peter, I saw your billboard. It's like, wow, this is cool. So I posted a photo of the billboard and just said it was the last day, and I was feeling a little emotional. And it was, I think I'm up to 400 likes and 150 comments or something.
Did you interview, was the Joe Montana with you, or was that with somebody else?
That was Kevin the Rat.
Okay, because I found a billboard picture of Kevin the Rat with Joe Montana.
Yeah,
okay, that wasn't you. Renee, you have to go next because I have no idea what I'm going to say.
I was just asking if you're feeling the love the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
With kind of K-Fog getting back in the news.
And... Yeah, it was really nice. It was really nice. And it's more about stuff like this where you just remember things and get to see your old buddies again. It's just sweet. It's also bittersweet.
Well,
I mean, it's such a bummer because I still love radio, but there isn't many options to love out there.
I will say it was very sweet that the Chronicle, bless its heart, posted, you know, doing stories about it. Oftentimes it was the photo of the four of us from the morning show years.
Yeah.
So my mom over at Rossmore and Walnut Creek clips it out of the paper and sends it to me. Yeah.
For me, because I've been sitting on all these archives for a lot, and I've been posting them for a while, but it's actually coming more to the fore. It's more in my face on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of, wow, we did some pretty cool stuff. So, but it has been very nice hearing from so many people. Yeah, for sure.
And thank you for having us.
Yeah.
This has been fun too.
I am so stoked that you're here, and I think you guys are just a special part of Bay Area culture, and certainly, you know, I'm so glad I got to be a guest a few times and a listener, and I went to events and Kaboom, but I think those memories are going to get stronger. And I know there are a lot of things that go away and you're like, not sure you remember it. And, you know, I had a 30-year-old come in here talking to me clear as day as his falling in love with San Francisco was, you know, he lived in Ben Lomond and as soon as the KFOG signal came in, he knew he was close.
His
parents were fans. So I think those stories are gonna linger, and if anything, it's gonna grow. I think it's awesome that you have a lot of the old audio and you can get that out there.
One thing, just to go on what you were just saying, does this ever happen to you guys when you're out in some situation and someone suddenly recognizes your voice and they're a younger person, so they're 30 years old or whatever, and they go up, "I grew up listening to you," and I'm like, "Don't tell me that! Oh my god!"
Well, I know.
How old am I?
This guy Peter just mentioned. We announced Dave Morey announced his birth on the radio, right?
No, is that Eric Kingsbury?
Yeah.
Eric Kingsbury.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Oh. I love it.
Yeah, we're old, but it was a great run.
Totally great.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, thank you.
I feel
you.
Like I brought you down with
no,
this.
No,
absolutely
no,
not.
No.
Absolute joy.
Thanks again for coming in, guys. And thanks for all the radio and thanks for everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you to Peter Finch, Renee Richardson, and Greg McQuaid. Our producer today is me, Peter Hartlob. Supervising producer is King Kaufman. Executive producer is Tim O'Rourke, and our editor-in-chief is Audrey Cooper. Music is The Tide Will Rise by the Sunset Shipwrecks off their album Community. Read our columns and subscribe to The Chronicle at www.sfchronicle.com. Chronicle podcasts are on Apple Podcasts and other streaming services. Listen at www.sfchronicle.com/podcasts with an S.